From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Nobody likes their taxes being raised, but an organization in Eugene wants to raise taxes on major retailers to help offset their carbon footprint. It's an action based on a similar model in Portland, and if it qualifies for the ballot and gets passed by voters, some of the nation's largest retailers may be impacted from their operations here in the city. And the amount is not insignificant. If passed, it could raise millions. Today on the show, you'll hear from the organizers and hear why they think it's necessary and passable. Then, in the second part of the show, a different kind of environmental story, the saga of the Coffin Butte landfill in Benton County, and how county officials have done a 180 on expansion. That's next on Oregon on the Record. It's easy to see a refinery as a major source of pollution and greenhouse gases, but retailers have an enormous carbon footprint as well, and a local organization thinks they need to pay much more to offset their pollution. We talk to them now. Aya Cockrum with the Breach Collective, also a community member and chief petitioner on the initiative, and Dylan Plummer, acting deputy director of the Sierra Club's Clean Heat campaign and a resident of Eugene. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us, Michael.
I'm just going to start with you. What is the Eugene Clean Energy Fund campaign?
Yeah, the Eugene Clean Energy Fund would require large retailers, so that's billion-dollar corporations earning more than $1 billion nationally, $500,000 in gross profits within Eugene, to pay about 2% of their gross profits annually into a fund that would benefit clean energy and community justice projects.
Okay. Dylan, kind of lay out the current situation that led to this ballot measure. You know, any way in which you can quantify how much pollution, how much destruction of the environment is being caused by the targets that this initiative is going after?
Yeah, so this initiative isn't regulating any polluters so much as it's establishing a fee to generate revenue that can be used to support reaching Eugene's climate action goals and building a more sustainable and vibrant community for all Eugene residents. And it really kind of was inspired by some of the bold goals that were set by the city of Eugene, first in 2014 with the Climate Recovery Ordinance, which committed the city to reducing its fossil fuel use, which we know is driving the climate crisis, by 50% of 2010 levels by 2030. And so right now, despite the best efforts of our city, we're still well behind those goals with 2030 fast approaching. And we see this fund as a critical step to ensuring that there are funds that are available to make investments in renewable energy, in active transportation, like protected bike lanes and public transit, and these different kind of mechanisms that we know will help us reduce our emissions while making a more affordable and livable city for Eugene residents.
Okay. Maybe if you could, how, as I understand it, you still need to qualify for the ballot. How close are you? Kind of what is the proximity of getting this qualified on the ballot?
Yeah, so we're right at the beginning of this campaign, Michael. So we filed the initiative petition on February 20th, and we recently received our ballot title from the city, and now we need to collect signatures. So we are going to need, we're aiming to collect about 10,000 signatures, which would be more than we needed, but ensure that we could qualify for the ballot. And we need to collect those by the end of summer. So we have a lot of work to do, but we know that the community is really supportive of climate.
Dylan, pull on that thread a little bit in terms of, you know, talk about why you think you're going to have broad support for this.
Absolutely. Well, the first and foremost, I would just point to what happened in Portland in 2018. They ran a similar initiative, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, almost 10 years ago now, and it passed overwhelmingly with widespread support from labor unions, environmental activists, community members, you name it. And since then, they have dispersed not just tens of millions, but over $100 million towards clean energy projects, whether it's net zero, affordable housing, projects to install heat pumps and increase energy efficiency in small businesses, the variety of different projects that have already seen significant benefits coming to the community. And so, you know, we're looking to Portland for inspiration, and we know that Eugene residents have long been supportive of ambitious action to protect our climate and our environment. And so we expect that this will be an easy sell to Eugene residents. And we really look forward to just all of the benefits that we can start seeing in our community once we are holding these big corporations accountable for their pollution and for their impacts, and making sure that those funds are being routed towards projects that our community supports.
Okay. I'm going to quickly reintroduce you both to the audience, talking with Aya Cockrum. She's with the Breach Collective and the community member and chief petitioner of this initiative, and Dylan Plummer, acting deputy director of the Sierra Club's Clean Heat campaign, also a Eugene resident. Aya, maybe if you could, for our audience, you know, this initiative is targeting big retailers. Maybe explain to folks who may not know sort of the carbon footprint of the retail industry and how that industry contributes to greenhouse gases, to pollution, to our global warming.
Yeah, absolutely. So these large corporations, and the ones we're talking about affecting with this fund, are your Walmarts, your Home Depots, your Amazons, and they really have an outsized effect on community pollution while, you know, giving back very little in the communities that they work in. So we see, I think, for every dollar spent in communities, only about 14 cents goes back to the community in these large businesses. So it's really, really important that they pay their fair share. And we've certainly seen examples in our community specifically, like J.H. Baxter, which is now a community Superfund site. So we're really trying to look at turning this on its head and saying, hey, we're going to take money from these big corporations who are polluting more and contributing less into our communities and do something positive with it. And again, returning to that example of J.H. Baxter, what could we do with this Superfund site? Could we turn it into a site for public power? Things like that.
Okay. I'm going to stay with you, Aya, because I want to ask this question in terms of, what are you up against? I imagine that, you know, these are big multinational corporations with deep pockets. You know, imagine there's going to be some significant lobbying efforts against this initiative. Talk about that conflict.
Yeah, well, again, we can kind of look to Portland for an example. We did see some of the big businesses pushing back on this initiative, and we do expect to see some of that here in Eugene. But again, this fund is going to be giving back to our community. It's going to be supporting local business. It's going to be creating jobs in our community and good, well-paying union jobs as well. So we're expecting some opposition, but we're also expecting that this is going to be a really exciting rallying point for our community.
Okay.
So we do expect some pushback, and we look forward to winning the community over and just showing them what we can do with this incredible opportunity.
And if I could just jump
go
in
ahead,
too, especially with the Trump administration's attacks on climate policy and their rollback of hundreds of millions of dollars from projects here in Oregon on clean energy and community resilience, we think that this initiative is more important than ever. And while big businesses might try to scare residents with misinformation and big dollar advertising campaigns, we know that Eugene residents are hungry for corporate accountability, for climate action, and for our city to kind of forge its own path to supporting a transition away from fossil fuels into clean energy, especially with the uncertainty that's happening in the White House and with these attacks at the federal level on climate programs.
Okay. Dylan, I'm going to stay with you, because if this initiative were to pass, do you think it can coexist with economic growth?
Absolutely. Like I was saying, you know, the funds that are generated by this fee will go to supporting our community and supporting local businesses. Eugene has been a vibrant community in large part because of our focus on environmentalism, on access to nature, on bike paths and walking paths and our beautiful greenway along the river. And this fund will only contribute to that and make our city a more desirable place for people to move to, increasing our tax base and increasing, you know, potential customers for local businesses and for large businesses, right? We don't see this as mutually exclusive with economic growth at all. We see this actually as critical to ensuring that Eugene remains a nationally renowned environmental leader and a desirable place for people to move and raise their families and grow old.
Can a local ordinance make a difference?
Well, it absolutely can make a difference. One, for the lives of the people who live in our community. This fund is not just reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It's going to reduce energy bills for working families. It's going to support local businesses in our community. It's going to be creating jobs, as I mentioned before. So in that regard, it's going to be having a huge impact on the everyday lives of families in Eugene. And I think that's also sets an important example for other communities of how we can, you know, hold these big businesses accountable, how we can really take things into our own hands and move the needle on climate action.
Yeah, and as I was saying too, you know, Eugene is widely known as an environmental leader nationally. And so if Eugene can pass a clean energy fund, then other cities will be looking to us as an example, as a model that they can replicate. We know it's only by taking action at the individual level, at the local level, that we can build towards the systemic action that we know is necessary in order to address the climate crisis and save lives. So there's no action that's too small. And this action would be fairly significant, not just like I said, in building a greener and more desirable city and creating jobs, but also reducing emissions, building energy resilience, expanding access to community solar programs and other programs that'll keep the lights on, even if there are power outages, things of that nature.
She's Aya Cockrum, with the Breach Collective, a community member and chief petitioner on this initiative. And he is Dylan Plummer, acting deputy director of the Sierra Club's Clean Heat Program and a resident of Eugene. Really appreciate both of you coming on and explaining this initiative.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
Now, our reporter fills us in on the major reversal in Benton County on the Coffin Butte landfill. KLCC reporter Nathan Wilk. Nathan, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
You've been on this Coffin Butte story for quite some time. For our listeners, give us the 30,000-foot overview of the twists and turns about this particular landfill.
Perfect. So the Coffin Butte landfill, it's located north of Corvallis. It's near a small town called Adair Village. It collects a lot of trash from surrounding counties, as well as from Washington. And it's been trying to expand, to extend its lifespan for several years. It says it has a little over a decade left. A previous attempt, it failed in 2021. Benton County shot that down. And they've come back in recent years to try to extend southward. Now, a lot of community members have been very upset with the Coffin Butte landfill. Over the past couple years, they've described dump days, these days where just the odor from the landfill has been very poor and made it difficult to go about their day-to-day lives. You know, they've also described other concerns in terms of the road if this were to expand and fire risk. And that's been backed up in their view by recent investigations. Several EPA inspections have found huge methane leaks. So one that was twice the explosive a quantity, the minimum explosive quantity, and so they've been fighting this expansion request for several years now.
Okay, so if memory serves, it wasn't that long ago where the Benton County Commissioners did approve the expansion, and what did they say was the reason to grant that application for expansion?
Sure. So the Benton County Planning Commission, which is sort of lower than the county commissioners on the decision-making totem pole here, they denied it. But when it was appealed to the Benton County commissioners, they approved it on a sort of what they call a quasi-judicial basis, which is essentially, you know, they weren't looking at whether they liked the landfill, whether they thought the landfill was doing a good job. And in hearings, they kind of spoke about the current landfill being not entirely relevant to this expansion proposal. Basically, you know, are they meeting the requirements? Does it look like they will meet the land use criteria moving forward? And they said, you know, that the expert testimony and the models that were in this application were good enough, essentially. Now, even at that hearing, Nancy Wise, one of the commissioners who voted that time to approve it, 2-1, you know, cried and said that she really personally did not like this landfill, did not think it was a good neighbor, did not think it was a good thing for the community. But, you know, the testimony that came about during that part of the process, which was from neighbors, environmental organizations saying, hey, this is going to be a bad thing. You know, here's our experience living next to it or being next to it, was not weighed as heavily as some of that other expert testimony and modeling from Republic Services, the landfill's owner itself.
Okay. So fast forward to just this week, 180-degree change. They voted it down. Talk about that.
Right. So they used sort of an obscure part of this process, relatively obscure. The opponents of the landfill appealed it to the Land Use Board of Appeals. So they tried to move it up. And Benton County commissioners were allowed to, under that process, pull it back to reconsider it before it goes up the ladder. And the reason that they did that is just days after they made their decision, a report came out, or rather a pre-enforcement notice from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, basically saying to the current Coffin Butte landfill and its owners, you know, your monitoring's incomplete, your covering doesn't seem complete, some of your systems are not large enough. And so what this did is provide a sort of institutional, official government agency account of what was, you know, already some of the concerns that the community members and environmental groups had been raising. So it came back to the Benton County commissioners. They pulled it back and they unanimously decided, hey, we're going to lean on the testimony from the Oregon DEQ, which, as county staff said, you know, sort of undermines some parts of this application, some of the assumptions that the application had made about odor and its odor study may be wrong based on this information that we have from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. So essentially that trumped some of the previous testimony in the eyes of the commissioners, and they have now shot this down.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience, talking to our reporter, Nathan Wilk, about the Coffin Butte landfill. Okay. So, you know, what have, especially in light of this reversal, what have environmental groups been saying? What have residents been saying about this decision?
Sure. Well, you know, obviously they're happy about it. Ken Eklund, you know, one of the residents in the area who has been opposing this for a long time, you know, said he was really proud of the local groups that had raised the money to appeal this, which then gave the commissioners the ability to pull it back and make the decision. On the other hand, I think there is an amount of frustration when I speak to environmental groups like Beyond Toxics or those neighbors, that it took this to have the commissioners sort of side with what community members have been saying for years and throughout this process and in all of the public hearings. You know, so I think there's mixed feelings, but, you know, a level of confidence going into the next steps of this process now that, you know, the county commissioners have really given their stamp of disapproval here.
Okay. Any comment from the landfill owner?
Right. So I reached out to them when they made this decision, when county commissioners made this decision. You know, they said they believed that they had made an error and that they were considering next steps and were, you know, hoping to continue to operate the landfill responsibly. It's unclear right now which next steps they'll take, but that's their position at this time.
You mentioned next steps. Any idea of sort of what happens next? Is it dead in the water, or is it still possible that the expansion could somehow happen?
Right. So there are a few options here. The first is they could appeal this to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Now, what I'll say is when we've spoken to opponents of the landfill, they feel more confident now than they did before sending it to the Land Use Board of, because they were looking to send it to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Please overturn the county commissioner's decision. Now it's, if it's appealed, they'll have to affirm that position, and they definitely feel in a stronger state, you know, feeling like it's less likely that the Land Use Board of Appeals will sort of flip something that has already been decided versus sustain something. The other option, and you know what we've seen before, is after that a previous attempt failed, back several years ago, Republic Services, which is a huge company with a lot of money and mm-hmm. time until this landfill runs out of space and has to close, could kind of go back to the drawing board and come back later with an amended application to expand the landfill, which maybe tries to address some of these concerns. So it's unclear what will happen, between those options or nothing at all. Certainly this is not necessarily the nail in the coffin for Coffin Butte expanding.
Well said, well said. Nathan Wilk, a reporter for us here at KLCC, really appreciate you informing us about this story that, again, could continue. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, you'll hear from departing Eugene City Council member Alan Zelenka, who's been on the council for decades, but he's decided in our toxic political culture that he's seen and heard enough. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.